When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Puck and Roll.
Yeah, I'm chilling on a dirt road, laid back, swerving like I'm George Jones. Smoke rolling out the window, and ice cold beer sitting in the console. Memory laid up in the headlights, it's got me reminiscing on the good times. I'm turning off a real life drive, and that's right, I'm hitting.
Hello, and welcome back to the Puck and Roll podcast. This is our first one back in a while, so we're going to try to make this a fun and interesting one. And we're going to start off with a pretty big topic. As of right now, I'm just joined by Aaron, but Josh should be joining us shortly, and we're very excited to have him back on. The first podcast where he's a married man, so it's quite a special occasion for him. And yeah, but I think before he arrives, we can start breaking down the Habs draft class. And, well, both me and Aaron were at the draft and experienced it in a very upfront and personal way. So, Aaron, get us started with the draft recap.
Okay. So, leading up to the draft, two major things happened. One, a rumor that was later confirmed came out that the Nashville Predators offered us the 15th and the 24th overall picks, as well as top league Yaroslav Askarov, the fifth overall pick. And when we didn't take that, I'm like, okay, clearly they're holding out for a really special player. Who could that be? And then the betting odds shifted to plus 140 for Matvey Michkov. The betting odds on Slavkovsky were plus 180. So I'm like, okay, let's go. I've been waiting all year for this.
He was very hyped. I think I was less convinced of the likelihood. I was getting more hopeful, but I was far from convinced. Aaron was all aboard the hype train on the day of the draft. It was
I was like, okay,
you were convinced. Yeah.
This franchise is saved. We need like a one right D. We can get that in 2024. We'll find a goalie somewhere, but we have our franchise superstar. And we don't have our franchise superstar. We have a top four right defenseman.
Who's very good. David Reimacher is a very, very good player. And I think that's one thing that is very important to make clear, because he got a lot of backlash after the selection, which
disgusting backlash,
awful, like some really, really awful things in there. And I think I don't think any player should have to go through or any person should have to go through what he did.
He's 18, punished, like he's
being punished for living out his dream and being picked fifth overall in the NHL draft class, I think is horrifying. But from a hockey standpoint, Reimacher would not have been the player I would have selected at that slot, especially with the trading back options. There were defensemen available at those picks later on. I mean, Nashville picked one in Tanner Melendijk, but other options were there. They could have taken a big swing on a player like Bo Akey or something, or just trade it down from 24 into the second and then comfortably pick one of those second tier right shot defensemen that were available. And there would have been
a chance. Or they could have just taken Cam Allen at some point. I feel like that's kind of a blunder. Like, I mean,
they picked Sam Harris over Cam Allen, so I don't think that he was high up their board.
That pick, just like we did it last year too. We picked Jared Davidson at 130, passing on Vladimir Grudinin. This year, we picked Sam Harris at 133, passing on Timur Mukhanov.
Like, and Cam Allen.
Yeah, and a lot of other players. But what you gonna do?
Yeah, it's an interesting draft class as a whole. I think the Jacob Fowler selection at 69 is an excellent one. Fits Montreal's needs perfectly. I think that he also has some time now to just simmer and marinate in the NCAA with Boston College, which is a very strong development program for goaltending
And he's
specifically.
already expressed that he doesn't want to rush it.
And then
I think he does all 4 years and
I think
then.
it's very possible. He's very raw. He's really unconventional in his style of play, and there's a lot of kinks to work out, but he's darn effective. Like few
Betting on
goaltenders
save
are more effective
percentage.
than he is. And it's a swing on save percentage, and he stepped it up even further in the playoffs. And I mean, Youngstown won the championship. Like he led them to a championship. And usually 18-year-old goaltenders aren't that dominant in the USHL. But Fowler was, and I think it's a really smart swing for the Habs. And I was getting a bit hopeful after that pick that the rest of the draft would be similar high value upside swings, but the next pick I think dampened my hopes on that front a little bit.
So with the 101st overall pick, where many high upside, even pretty decent floor players were around, and I hear from the Hamilton Bulldogs, I'm like, wait a damn minute, who's on Hamilton that would be going in the fourth round? Nobody. I didn't expect Florian Jacka to be drafted in the draft.
Me neither.
Like, you're talking about a 19-year-old with 25 points in 68 games playing like
Look,
14 minutes a night in the OHL.
thing is, Florian Jacka is a good OHL piece. He's probably like a third, like a bit of a third line OHLer. Hamilton wasn't the strongest team this year, but for me, it's difficult to rationalize spending your third draft pick in a year where you were tanking on a player who, as a D plus one forward, was significantly under half a point a game in the OHL. And I've watched a fair bit of him live. I was never intrigued enough to even like consider putting him on my watch list, let alone ranking him. He plays with violence and intensity like Arbor does. But unlike Arbor Jacki, who in the OHL was
Was a mess.
mesmerizing on the ice, like flashing some really impressive tools. Like he would go end to end in possession of the puck. He'd try some wacky dangles, and he was creative and effective, very strong defensively. And Florian Jacki spends a similar amount of time in the box to Arbor did, which is not the greatest. But when he's on the ice, he's kind of there. He's
Invisible.
he's an OHL body. I love the family story of it. I think it's quite beautiful. I love underdog tales and that they both grew up Habs fans in Ontario and now both are members of the Habs organization, I think is really beautiful.
I'm like, you
And
know what? If we picked him at 197, fine. It's our seventh round flyer.
yeah.
We're gonna take like we don't have to hit with our
It's
seventh
an
round
early
guy.
fourth round draft pick.
It was the third pick in the fourth round, or the fifth pick. Like it was,
I mean, it was the third pick of the Habs draft class, which I
yeah.
think is what concerns me the most here. But look, it's a swing, I guess, on
It's a
family lineage.
swing.
And look, if Florian's development curve mirrors Arbor's, he's going to be a disgusting player this season. And then maybe. But I think at that point you're almost swinging on
You're
him
banking on a unicorn development curve? That's
and matching his
risky.
brothers. It's also, I think, applying a lot of pressure onto Florian because there's now the expectation that his development curve is as unique and weird as Arbor's in terms of it happens, but just very, very late. So I don't know. That pick was probably the most confusing one in the draft class for me, where I was looking around to all the other public scouts around us when the Habs announced that selection, just a kind of wide-eyed, and everyone just gave me the wide-eyed glance back of just like, okay, that is a selection.
Like it's look, it's mean to say it was a wasted pick because he could
I don't
turn
think it's a
out.
wasted pick. It's just, I think, especially with what the
There's
Habs have
no way to
communicated.
say that he was the highest value option.
And it's with everything the Habs have communicated. Like they've said, we need more skill. We want intelligent, skilled players who can fit the modern game. And Florian Jacka is, if he develops perfectly, you're getting a Michael Pezzetta.
Yeah.
And like, that's with perfect development.
Like if he stays on this curve, like where he is right now on a normal development curve, you have a fourth line AHL player.
Yeah, bottom six AHL are likely.
Six, because he doesn't have the type of offensive skill to be a top six player.
I haven't seen it yet. I mean, I'm hoping.
I'd love for it to happen.
Exactly. Like
it's an insanely likable story. He seems like a likable guy, and he plays a type of style that, if he can fill out his game, is going to be really effective.
I mean, you adore Michael Pezzetta.
Michael Pezzetta.
But he could be Michael Pezzetta.
But Michael Pezzetta was the 160th overall pick 7 years ago.
He's now 13th forward.
Who came off like an 85-point OHL season as one of the youngest captains in the league. Like, you're not talking about the same thing here.
Mm-hmm.
Best pick out of the 2016 draft, in my opinion.
But yeah, the Habs have made some other interesting swings, I guess, in the fourth. I mean, Bogdan Konyushkov at 110 is genuinely intriguing.
Very intriguing.
I've watched a couple clips of him, and they kind of match the excitement I was hearing on the draft floor and among public and NHL scouts that liked him quite a bit. And
people who knew about him really liked the pick. I hadn't heard of him at all, so.
Oh, neither had I. Yeah. But this is a puck moving right shot defenseman who is playing first pairing minutes as an undersized 20-year-old in the KHL. That's a really intriguing profile to me. And I watched a little bit. I don't think the upside here is elite or anything, but obviously it's a fourth round draft pick. You don't expect elite upside. But I think it's a really, really fun swing to make in the fourth round. I think I was a little bit frustrated that the Habs made two Russian picks in the fourth and fifth rounds and passed on the Russian in the first.
Yeah, because we got a guy who signed a 3-year extension immediately after the draft.
Instead of drafting the guy that already had that extension in place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with Konyushkov, he plays a style of game that fans are going to love if he comes over and he makes the NHL.
There's
a couple of ifs. I think the floor is a little higher than you think.
It's the style of play, yeah. Right? Like this is an undersized puck moving defenseman, which is a profile I adore. It's also not exactly a high floor profile. Like,
yeah.
Yes, he's playing big KHL minutes right now, but this could be the type of player who, like look at Chris Weidman. Chris Weidman dominated the KHL for a season, then came to Montreal.
That's true.
And it was a replacement level number six defenseman. And he's also kind of that undersized kind of puck moving guy, I guess, like PP2 type of player. That's kind of what I envision Konyushkov being in all likelihood.
And also, if Konyushkov continues his development, he played in the VMHL last year, or the VMNL or something. I don't even know what it's called, but it's not
the VHL.
No, it's below the VHL. He wasn't in the. Let me just Google it. One second.
And MHL, but it was two games. It's two games. He was in the VHL.
He was in the VHL, so that's ECHL level.
But NMHL, he was in before that. So he has bounced around a little bit in terms of the leagues, but.
And then he was just a KHL mainstay this year.
It's definitely an interesting pick.
Look, I was really happy that I was able to talk to people about it.
Yes.
Because the people who knew about him were mad that he was gone at 110.
Yes.
Because, like, I mean, there's a reason we hadn't heard of him. No, nobody was talking about him in the public sphere.
No.
And, no. I like him a lot. He plays with a lot of physicality along the boards. He has amazing stick work. He's an analytical darling. But there are a lot of ifs.
Again, we'll see in 3 years. Once his contract is up, or if the Habs are able to get him out before the contract ends, who knows?
I mean, like, Torpedo is not the wealthiest organization in the world, so you have a shot.
But it's also a thing of he will be playing a massive role for that team, and losing him would be dire. So they might have to cling on harder than other teams would. At 128, Quentin Miller, as it was beautifully announced in Québécois franglais in Nashville, QMJHL goalie put up good numbers in 20 games this year. Small sample, but pretty
what really
consistent.
intrigues me there is the Rompart traded their starter to Ruben Alejandro. So Miller is their starter next year in his second season in the queue. That, if you have a Memorial Cup winning team that's willing to take that risk, maybe there's something there. And he was really good in his 20 games. So
it's a
we'll
swing
see.
On a goalie.
We'll
I'm okay with it. Like, and then we can do the next goalie right away.
We have to take one Q pick. There has to be one pick from the queue in the draft.
This is true, and I think there are worse swings to take within the queue. Better ones maybe too, but especially when you consider that the Habs also picked Evgeny Volokhin at 144, another goalie. That's three goalies in this class, and all swings on save percentage, which I don't mind. I really don't. But I don't know. It's weird to me because, like, I'm curious if the Habs are that pessimistic around Jakub Dobesh that they had to use a third of their picks this year on goaltenders, because I've thought that Dobesh's progression has been very impressive.
I think we have a pretty good idea on where they stand on Caden Primo now.
Oh, yeah. Caden Primo is going to be gone.
On waivers,
Joe
Verbeek, pretty soon.
Verbeek's going to be gone. Like, a lot of these guys are going to be gone. I mean, they even added Stress Man. Like they're adding another goaltender to the fold. So there's going to be some turnover there.
Yeah,
for sure.
They added two, Stress Man and another one in the ECHL, I think.
For the ECHL, I'm thinking mainly of the top.
It was an
two.
AHL. Wait, who was it? 1 second.
Doesn't really matter as long as do you really have to check?
No, because
it doesn't matter.
Zachary,
the ECHL.
Okay. Zachary Amo, and he has like insanely good numbers for some reason.
This is going to be your Nick Beaudin. You're going to project him as a future NHL starting goaltender when he's 23 years old and has never played above the ECHL.
Nicolas Beaudin has potential.
Nick Beaudin, if everything goes right, is Chris Weidman. And everything has to go right for that. Like, everything. I think top four potential is a bit optimistic there. But at 133, the Habs picked Sam Harris, who I really haven't watched at all. But was good in the USHL. I must have watched him in passing a couple times, but I didn't outright notice him. I think also having more goals than assists in your 19-year-old USHL season
is
also
he not
a little bit of a red flag
D2?
For me. Sorry,
is he not a D+2?
He's an October 14th birthday. He's a
he
D+1.
Is playing on one of the worst teams in the USHL.
Yeah, and I mean, look, he went a point a game, and 30 goals, 26 assists. It's okay. It was really hot. Like, there were still a lot of names on the board that I was really intrigued by at this point. Like, picking him over Cam Allen to me is strange with the Habs' lack of right D depth. And yes, Cam Allen did not have a good season, and there are decision making question marks there for sure. But
was there any reason you should have fallen to 136?
This is my thinking, unless he was bombing interviews, which obviously was,
which is entirely possible.
In the public, we don't know.
But we also know that some players that did bomb interviews
still
went crazy high.
Yeah. So, who knows? Philip Erickson is an interesting high floor, low ceiling guy. I watched a little bit of him after the draft and thought he was totally okay. I don't know. I have no idea.
You're talking about a sixth round pick. Like,
at the same time, look, last year the Habs picked Adam Engstrom, and I was like, very meh around that selection. And I'm now very enthusiastic about that selection in retrospect. So
I think Konyushkov is our Engstrom this year.
Possible, but I'm thinking more in terms of like the Swedish base scout being the one to.
Well, actually, Sam Harris is has Swedish.
I know
he's
half Swedish.
Apparently.
Yep. Yeah, but
we just can't stop drafting Swedes.
Yeah, and then finally Luke Mittelstadt, who is a nice pick, and I'm happy about him having gotten a selection. I don't know if he wouldn't have been the guy I would have picked there, but it's a pick that I'm totally comfortable with in the seventh round. He was really good at the U20 World Junior Championship this year. He's been just rock solid in the NCAA consistently, and he deserved to get picked. In his draft year, he deserved to get picked last year, and he deserved to get picked this year. So I'm glad that someone did. I just, yeah, it's a, it's, If he tops out, he's likely a number six defenseman. But it's a fun little like underdog story, and I think he's progressed a lot in the last 2 years. So who knows? Maybe Look, there is a higher ceiling there than I am currently envisioning.
I'm really happy he got picked. But if we're going to draft somebody whose likely ceiling is a number five or number six defenseman, could it at least be on the right? Because, like, at this point, you have nine guys that can be a number six left defenseman.
Yeah, pretty much.
If we're going to try to, like, address take a high upside center or a winger, take fourth goalie for all I care. But
or just pick Francesco Dell'Alce if you want to go with the left.
Exactly. Like, you're gonna bring him to training camp anyways. Get him before he like blasts off in the BC. Like
and middle stats value is likely not going to skyrocket in the next year, whereas Dell'Alce is very reasonably could.
Like, and I can see him being a top 100 pick next year.
He's
a young birthday. Like,
I think it could be like a Riker Evans situation where he gets passed over and then goes top 64 the year after.
I can see it.
It all depends how he does in Penticton, but. Yeah, he's good. He's really fun. He's raw. He has a lot of growing to do. But he's off for the BCHL before he even goes to the NCAA. Like, he has at least 5 years.
And you're drafting a guy who's almost 3 years younger than Middlestat.
Yeah, like you're waiting longer, but you might get a really interesting player out of it. And
like, am I 100% confident that Dell'Alce is going to be better than Middlestat? No, but do I think in 3 years Dell'Alce is going to be better than Middlestat? Yeah.
I think it's more likely that Middlestat ends up as technically a better player than Dell'Alce, but I think the likelihood of Dell'Alce being an impact player is significantly higher than Middlestat's. I don't see any top four upside with Middlestat, and I do see some with Dell'Alce, whereas I don't really see bottom pairing potential for like, Dell'Alce. He plays too chaotic.
With bottom pairing for Luke Middlestat is teams don't like that type of player on their bottom pairing.
That too.
Like, it's a tough situation because I love that he got drafted. I was rooting for him last year, too. Just he doesn't fit our scheme at all.
Montreal's not the most sensible place for him to have landed. There's a big logjam.
Yeah, it's just odd. Because so many players would have to move for him to even get a chance. Yeah. And he deserves a chance.
He does, for sure. He does. It's just the Habs. Great. Have a log jam, and
he can be our ninth left defenseman in the system playing bottom pairing minutes in the ECHL.
Like, if guys like William Trudeau don't even have a path really to the NHL in the Habs organization, I don't think Luke Middlestat will.
Exactly. Like, I think the best route for him would be send them to Europe, maybe, to develop.
They did the same thing with Tourigny last year.
Yeah. And I that was good for him. Second tier Slovakian hockey. But, like, there's no way he even cracks the AHL with our depth. And do you really want to throw a 5'11", 175-pound guy into the ECHL?
Sure. Cam Hales can do it. I think if he can do it, Middlestat can easily. Cam Hales was never a very big, strong guy.
Cam Hales had one hell of a year last. Guy played an NHL game in a season where he played like 25 ECHL games.
Oh, way more ECHL, love that. I think. Yeah, yeah. Like, he, interesting storyline for Cam Hillis, but I think as a whole, the Habs draft class was weird. I think weird is the closest I've gotten to describing it accurately with how I feel about it. It's the most confounding draft class of any team in the NHL this season, in my view, in terms of, okay, yes, I can understand, like, okay, they picked a right D at five and three goalies. Those were two areas of weakness. I understand that for sure. What I don't understand as much is how they are using their assets. If you wanted a goalie and you wanted a right D, the trade of Askarov and at least 15th overall, I don't think 24 is confirmed to have been included in that offer, but at the very least it's 15 and Askarov and another pick. We don't know what, if that's the first round or a second or a third. But if you need a goalie, I would make that trade. And it can always flip. You could have flipped like 15 or 24 for an existing right shot defenseman in the NHL. Like, I think I would have approached that differently. I would have approached it differently than that if they were like really, really, really tunnel vision on needing to work on defense and goalie in the prospect pool. And Nashville's offer for five, I think, was really enticing.
Because
if
like,
you were
look,
going to pick Mitch Kyle or Benson, or
I love Jacob Fowler. I think he was a great pick.
I agree.
I think Quentin Miller has potential. I think Evgeny Volokhin has really good numbers. Do I think any of them have a shot to be a better goalie than Yaroslav Askarov?
No.
No.
Of course not. Of course not. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a strange strategy, I think, as a whole, that the Habs employed at the draft. I'm curious to see how it ages. I think my biggest issue with the draft class isn't even the picks themselves. I would have really appreciated if the Habs have been very transparent as to why they're making these selections, whereas really their public like rationale for the moves was really like, oh, Reinbacher is for us the play that made the most sense in this spot and he'll be here soon and whatever. But they were very wishy-washy on answering questions.
And then our general manager is like, he's a number two second power play.
Aaron, stop. It's a strange enough draft class that you need to communicate why you're making these picks. And if you do and do so well, I can be okay with it, totally. But I don't think that they communicate with the fans very well. And I think as a result, fans way overreacted and also started going after Reinbacher personally to vent their frustration with the draft class. Whereas if the Habs had communicated that better, I think they could have insulated Reinbacher from that. But all in all, a very, very strange draft class. But Aaron, final thoughts on the class.
Okay, I'm not going to call it bad because I think we made some good picks in there. But there's no way to rationalize it to say that we had the highest value draft we could have had.
Last
season, it's entirely possible we had one of the highest value drafts we could have had because Slavkovsky is a unicorn. I don't think he's going to be like an elite player, but you see the stuff he's doing. He just raised his like pulmonary capabilities by 20% using some weird science in Sweden. Like, what other player is doing stuff like that? He's a special guy. And then Meshar has a crazy high ceiling. I still like him a lot as a prospect.
Crazy? I wouldn't say he has second line upside. I'm not as in love as
Jiří Kulik as a lot of people are. So I like Meshar would have been, barring Lane Hudson, like my third ranked player at that point. Like I think we made a good pick.
I agree. It was a decent selection. I had him ranked 18th overall. I liked him a lot.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have been a conversation with like for me between him and Brad Lambert. Like
it's a thing of course not.
But you picked Lambert here,
and then you get a guy, a second rounder that's already played an NHL game. I don't care about the circumstances. In Owen Beck, you have basically a guy that's
emergency
be a
recall.
Mm-hmm. I don't care. He played 9 minutes of NHL ice time and it was glorious.
And the results were bad. Like the metrics were bad.
I don't care. Look at his line mates.
He was 18.
Poor guy.
Or 19.
And then you draft Lane Hudson at 62nd. Roar looks good. Engstrom looks good.
Gagnon's decent.
Gagnon looks good.
Tourigny.
Tourigny is like for a guy in the seventh, sure.
Yeah.
And then, oh God, we drafted a couple other people. It doesn't matter.
Jared Davidson, Petteri Nurmi.
Yeah, Petteri Nurmi.
Couple.
He's kind of dropped off the face of the earth a little bit, but whatever. Like, if you miss on two picks, but then you have six guys that everybody's like, yeah, they look really good for their draft slots, you did good. And it wasn't the type of draft where it took a year. Engstrom, people were skeptical, but when you come out of the draft with Owen Beck and Lane Hudson in your second round, everybody's already happy.
Exactly.
That, I mean, besides the fact that we didn't pick between 5 and 69, which I think is a serious problem and it's for a team that's rebuilding, having two picks in the top 100 is just odd. Like, we didn't have that type of effect where you leave the draft with a couple guys saying, we made really high value selections here. If they don't work out, they don't work out. But we made the type of picks that will get us contending one day.
Yeah, I think this draft contains a ton of question marks. And look, I would love to change my tune on this with time. But it was very far from the type of draft class that I would have picked with the same slots. But yeah, I think as a whole, it was a very definitely an interesting class for Montreal. Like it gets us talking, clearly. Like we've been rambling for ages. And definitely very, very interesting. But we have now added Josh to the call. So Josh, welcome back to the pod. As a married man, how does it feel?
It's been great. Can't complain at all.
How's the honeymoon?
We're still in the honeymoon phase, but honeymoon to Newfoundland, the rock, beautiful, tons of birds, tons of hiking. It was like 15 degrees, which is way better than the 30 plus degrees that we've been dealing with in Ontario lately. So
that's so nice.
That's been great. And I don't know if you guys talked about this already, but how was the draft? You guys got to tell me everything. I was just missing out. It seemed amazing out there.
I mean, we may as well give a little bit of an info on our experience at the draft. I mean, we met a ton of awesome people, lots of people in the public scouting sphere, made some friends, made some slightly hazy memories. And
Nashville is an amazing city.
It was very entertaining. And I had a blast. I thought it was great meeting so many people that I've interacted with so much online already. And I think just having like the media access pass for the draft is kind of surreal. Like I just walk by people that you saw on TV when I was like 5 years old. And I was like, I have the same access pass as you. Like, this feels weird. This feels wrong, but I took it happily. And I mean, hey, Aaron, you had interesting experiences with that too. I mean, like Jarmo Kekalainen was behind you in the hot, in the burger line.
Oh my God. It was so
catering.
Oh.
Such a nice guy, by the way. Like, I'm guessing he kind of knew at that point because a lot of people were starting to figure out that Carlson was going to. That man was just beaming. Like, He was the one
GM that was kind of in the public area and just like didn't care and just he's just kind of hanging out there.
Like
when,
at this point,
like
you're
all
getting
the media people walking by him, he just didn't care. It was cool.
And like I'm sure he knew that he was getting Gavin Brindley and like William Whitelaw. Like he had his plan and he was just gonna roll with it.
Yeah, but yeah, it was definitely a cool experience, and we had a blast. We don't have to talk. I mean, look, we got very lucky with our departure being an early morning flight on the day after day two of the draft, because a lot of the friends we made got stuck at the Nashville airport for anywhere between 10 and 30 hours afterwards, and had to like sleep on like the not so clean carpets of the Nashville airport, which is also a much smaller airport than you'd expect for a city that size.
It's
cozy, to put it lightly. And I think I felt very compassionate when it was like the day after I got back home and people were still stuck at the airport. And I was like, oh no. Ugh. But
and we happened to be at our layover in Atlanta when the last remaining Atlanta Thrasher on the Winnipeg Jets got bought out in Blake Wheeler. So we just saw like the entire Atlanta Thrashers organization fall apart finally
while
completely.
We were in Atlanta.
While we were in Atlanta, it was kind of beautiful.
Beautiful? Oh wow! I didn't know that.
Because
you had such hatred.
I can guarantee you that
the
no other
dirty in your youth, huh?
No other person at that airport had any idea what was going on because nobody cares about hockey. I want them to get another team. I feel like if they do it properly, it can work. But I don't think anybody there was like, "Oh no, Blake Wheeler got bought out."
I mean, we were at the airport. I think
it's
a
so
lot of people
ago.
There were there for connections, but no, it was a really cool experience. But back to the hockey talk. Enough of our boring lives and experiences. Back to the hockey talk. And hockey talk sounds so similar to honky tonk. I just realized, and Nashville
this guy's still
came
in
back.
Nashville country
he listened
boys
to country
yeah.
music the entire week. It was
well. I mean, I felt responsibility to do so, and considering
you have
that
to.
I'm not going to listen to country music for the next while to compensate, I'm okay with it. But anyways, to refocus, we were indeed at a honky tonk bar when the Alex Newhook trade broke. So let's talk about the new hook trade. How do you guys feel about giving away 31, 37 and Gianni Fairbrother for Alex Newhook?
I felt better about it when it happened at compared to when it all kind of shook down at the draft, because like it's the same story as Kirby Doc last year, but on a smaller scale. But just the way that Montreal used their draft capital draft pick this year, I think could have been more well used. Like, I like the addition of Newhook. I think he's got skill and he's got the drive. Like, he came and said afterwards that he wasn't feeling it in Colorado. They weren't giving him the opportunities he was looking for because it's a deep forward team, established forward group. So he's definitely going to get all the chances to succeed in Montreal. I think he will, but not to the heights that Doc did in this past year. But I just think the skill and talent that they passed up on the 31s, those 30s picks, are a little bit steep for me, especially when they didn't manage to get any more draft capital this draft until the, was it the third round that they picked again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Fowler, yeah.
Yeah.
I just think with such a deep draft class, to not have any picks between 5 and 69 is just soured the deal for me. Like, I thought they'd be able to get a few picks in the middle there. But I'm excited and interested to see what Newhook does. I think he's definitely got gas in the tank left and a chip on his shoulder, so I think he'll be good. I just think what they left on the table was a little bit too much for me.
I think the contract extension did make it better. Not that anybody was expecting we weren't going to get a contract extension like this, but 4 times 2.9 is, it's a nice number. It's,
and he stays an RFA at the end of it, which is
key. Yeah. If he's a third line left winger, that's still a fine salary for him. If he's more than that, we have a great deal. So that's a win-win. The actual assets we gave up was a lot because of what he's done in Colorado. With Kirby Doc, you were getting a third overall pick from 3 years ago, who had been playing top 6 minutes already, not doing amazing in them, but still. And he's 6'3", he's fast. Not that I'm like a big size guy, but still. Alex Newhook, you're getting him same draft class a year later. He's 5'10". I don't really like, I think he's super skilled. I think he's going to be a great hab. But if you're putting so much emphasis on trying not to be a small team, acquiring another 5'10 guy just doesn't really make that much sense to me. And it's easy to say that, like, nobody really hits at 31 and 37, but it's not a matter of the people that go 31 and 37. It's who we, like, if you look at the guys who went 32 and 38 in some drafts, you're looking way better. So do I think either of those guys would have been higher upside players than Alex Newhook? Depends on who we drafted. That's all we can say. And it's a lot of what ifs. But Newhook's a hab now. I really want him to do great. I think he brings something fun to the team. It's not the fun thing that I would have been targeting with those picks if the plan was to trade them. I would have been going after a righty.
I think that Newhook is an incredible fit with the Habs. I think it's seamless. I think he like, in terms of age, with the contract now, I would have tried to get it up to 6 years at least, but four at such a cheap number is really, really palatable, obviously. But yeah, I think he's awesome. He brings speed and skill. He's really, really fun in transition. The Habs need more pieces that can actively carry the puck through the neutral zone. He plays with incredible pace. He has a fun little physical game. So while he is 5'10", I think his physicality will be closer to Nick Suzuki's than to, I don't know, the average 5'10 NHLer. But it's 31, 37 was a hefty price to pay in this draft class. I think
Jenny Fairbrother's not nothing.
Fair, but the thing is, I agree. He's a good AHL defenseman already. I think he could be a number six. But he's so surplus to requirements for the Habs, where it's not even really a consideration of what the Habs gave up for me right now. Because I think for Colorado, he's a good piece to add. But for Montreal, it's barely even.
We have so much surplus at that one position.
There's way too much surplus. Like, you have to move some of that value out while they're still under contract. But picks 31, 37 is steep in this year. I mean, saw the players who went in those slots being Mikhail Gulyayev and Ethan Gauthier. Both have been really fun. I mean, Gulyayev would not have made much sense for Montreal, but he's really fun and he could be something really good in Colorado. I don't know. It's a bit of a tough one. I adore the idea of adding Newhook, and I think the contract is excellent. I think his fit in the top six will be very, very good if you give it a year or two for him to really, really grow into that top six role. But he should have it from the get-go, I would hope. But it's a steep price, and it would have been different to me if they would have added another second-round pick or another two more thirds in other ways for this draft. But as you were saying previously, having two top 100 picks in a year where you're tanking, just it hurts. And the Habs are still lacking that elite level skill. And much as I adore Alex Newhook, I don't think that top line ceiling is there anymore. I think you could still become a really fun, electrifying second line guy on an elite contender. I can't see there being first line upside there, which is totally fine. I wish the Habs would have spent those assets to either swing on players that could become the pieces that are that valuable, or to trade for someone with, even if there's more risk involved, someone that could be that style of player at the top of the lineup. Because realistically, that is what the Habs are lacking. They have a ton of middle six caliber guys.
Everybody agrees
that. And Newhook is a high end middle six caliber guy, but he is a middle six caliber guy. Yeah, it's tough.
We have analytically, we have the second best prospect pool in the league and the 17th best star talent.
Yeah, it's all depth. It's entirely depth.
It's like our only star graduated. It's Caulfield.
Yeah.
He is the highest upside. Slav, yeah.
Hudson, if it works.
Hudson, yeah.
Hudson, yes.
Yeah, a couple. But again, it's middle of the pack in terms of star power for NHL E models.
You go back to every single cup win barring 2019, and there's a star forward on the roster.
I mean, the Habs could have that with Caulfield, technically, right? It's more just the way the Habs are planning it. I think the reason it concerns me is I think they're very optimistic in terms of what level they can get their players to. And I think I love that they are confident in their development staff. It's a lot of confidence to put into your development staff of saying, okay, we have six players here that could be top six caliber players. We might have three that could be top one caliber guys. We're set. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what scares me. I think you need a best case scenario in order to develop what the Habs currently have into a good top six on a high-end contending team.
One, you got to split up Caulfield and Suzuki.
I think Doc and Caulfield is a good combination to go forward with. I think Newhook would be a good complement to that line if you're trying to have a top six with interchangeable lines, and then you have like Suzuki, Slafkovsky,
Rafael Hargenard.
Yeah, RHP for now.
This year. But like,
or Gallagher or Suzuki, Anderson. Like, you have players that can fill those holes.
Suzuki's never gonna be the point per game flashy offensive guy. But he could be a point of game.
Yeah. He's close.
He's not a dynamic offensive talent who will break games apart. Yes.
He's way more valuable as a guy putting up 55 points who's in the Selke conversation, which he was in his first season.
He's going to be putting up more than that.
Yeah, I know it's going to be more than that, but bring back defensive Suzuki. Because
I agree.
That's way more valuable of a piece.
I think you should develop Suzuki to be the OP version of Philip Deneau. That's what I would do. I think that the Habs sort of kept Philip Deneau as well, and that would have been great. And you could have had him just mentor under Deneau, but that clearly didn't happen because $5 million was too steep.
Five was fine. Five and a half wasn't.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. It's
half the million.
Details. Yeah. You need half a Chris Weidman. That's the sticking point. Yeah.
Like 1/7 of a Yoel Armia.
But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting trade. I like the strategy of spending draft picks on players that have developed decently well in the last 3 years, but there's enough question marks where the teams that pick them want or are interested in selling. I think it's an interesting strategy, and I think it could pay off. I'm afraid if that is their main strategy for team building.
Unless their plan is to kind of mirror New York and sign their Panarin when they come out. So that would be Dreisaitl or Kaprizov. And once the cap goes up, they throw like $15 million at one of them, and that's our star player. But Panarin hasn't worked out that well in New York. So
sure he has. He's been great in New York.
He's amazing. What playoff success have they had? They went to the Eastern Conference Final and got crushed.
It doesn't matter. Panarin's one of the best UFA signings of all time. Like that really can't be the example here. Like, in terms of UFA signings in the last, 10, 15 years, I don't think you can point to four that are better than Panarin. Like, it's aged really nicely. He's putting up consistently, 100 points a season. Like, I think they're perfectly happy with Panarin. But there are all other team building issues in New York, obviously. But yeah, I think that concern is merited, that they're trying to apply the New York Rangers model onto the Habs, because it's not exactly working great in New York.
If we can snag the first overall pick in 2026, sure.
Gavin another year of tanking. Yeah. But I think it's interesting. And I think a trade that was quite decent was the Joel Edmondson trade. I think getting that value back is fine, all things considered. Considering that Edmondson has had a lot of back injuries, and his play this in last season was not very convincing. I think getting a third round pick back for it in a seventh was pretty good value for the Habs, and it opens up a spot, more importantly, for a young player to take over. Right, so now you have Gouley and Harris and Jack Eye that can all play on their left side if they want to. So that gives them some nice flexibility, I think. But yeah, it's been a strange offseason for the Habs, and I think I was expecting a bit more bold movement than they've made so far, and perhaps risks that I would be more enthusiastic about than I am. But definitely an interesting class as a whole, and it's an interesting offseason. But are there any other offseason comments from you guys?
I mean, we had the Caulfield extension, which...
Of course. Good. I like it.
It's a good deal. It's a good
great
deal.
Contract. It's a really good contract, in my view. He's one-dimensional and limited, I guess, but he's a star player, and he's going to score you a lot of goals, and you got him for 8 years at under 8 million.
It's great. 48 goals in the 83 games since Marty St. Louis took over.
Exactly.
I put him, weld him to Kirby Doc. Like, connect them to the point where they're, living together, doing everything together. Like, I need them to grow the most chemistry, because I think their games are perfect together. And then you find your tertiary piece on that line, which could be Slavkovsky.
Or Newhook.
I can see it working.
You got options. You've got options there, for sure.
This Doc is a genuinely elite playmaker. He is so good.
Not yet, but he could get there.
And I mean, if you give him a guy that can score 50,
he could get there.
Oh, I think they're such a good combo. I want it to happen really badly.
Yeah.
If it works, it works.
If it works, it works. But I'm curious to see what the Habs do in terms of mixing lines this year, and see which combinations they go for, because I'd be a little bit skeptical if they just to a fault keep Suzuki and Caulfield attached at the hip, because I love their bromance, and I think they're awesome together in the power play, but at even strength, I just don't think they complement each other well.
They're garbage analytically.
Suzuki's at his best when he's able to control the run of play and play defensively and yes, produce offense, but he's so multifaceted as a player, and that's where his value comes from, whereas Caulfield is an all-out guns-a-blazing goal scorer. And I don't think you get the most out of Suzuki by pairing him with Caulfield. I think Caulfield will also benefit by playing with a more daring offensive player like Kirby Doc. I think it'd be great as a combination. But
Suzuki played his best hockey with Thomas Tatar and Brendan Gallagher. not with Suzuki and not with Caulfield and Anderson. So
yeah,
obviously he's putting up more points, and it's fun to have our captain on the flashy first line, but he's not the highest end playmaker, and his game just doesn't fit that scheme. They're getting crushed in top matchups, whereas Doc, in the not as many top matches he took, they were
his defensive way metrics, smaller.
It's way smaller, but the defensive metrics were good too.
Yeah, but because he was in a situation to play defense, right? Whereas with Suzuki and Caulfield, they were told go out and score, like don't care about anything else. And while I think it's fun to give players that free reign, and I can understand how they got to that conclusion of wanting to give them that leeway to be creative and to grow offensively, I think that in a vacuum is great. I'm questioning if it's a long-term strategy rather than a short-term one. I think in the short term it's totally fine, but in the long term it's a bit more questionable because I just don't think it plays to Suzuki's strengths specifically. I think Caulfield is perfectly fine along with Suzuki. I think Suzuki really is at his best when he does not have to compensate for playing with Caulfield in the defensive zone. But yeah, I'm very curious to see what the Habs are doing moving forward. But yeah.
New customers, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. Bet just $5 to score $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
And for the last segment of today's episode, let us break down the Habs free agent frenzy, which was tame because they don't exactly have much cap space right now, understandably. And they signed a couple interesting people. Like as previously mentioned, Strauss Mann, I think, is an interesting AHL signing. I think he's a goaltender with NHL backup potential, which is something. I think it's interesting to add. Who are the other free agent additions that the Habs made?
We added one guy.
There are a couple AHL players.
We added somebody who's actually really fun. Let me just go find his name.
Oh, Elias Anderson. Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's not who I was thinking of. But yeah, Elias Anderson is
interesting. Fun. I mean, look, Gorton is the one who drafted him, or Bob Robb is the one who drafted him, both in New York at, what, 7th or 9th overall? And his development hasn't exactly gone smoothly, but last season was a really strong one in the AHL. And from every interview, he seems quite bullish about cracking the NHL lineup from the get-go in a top nine role,
honestly,
which I think is bold. But
I can see the line of Slavkovsky, Anderson, Yolonen working amazing.
That's a weird third line. That's a very strange third line. You'd need Dvorak to be traded, though, in order to open up that slot.
Oh, I'm willing to just waive him at this point. Like, whatever.
You can't. No. That's too much wasted value there. He still has some value.
So the guy I was thinking of was Philippe Maillet, who we signed him. I mean, look, he's 30. I doubt he plays any NHL games this season, but he's a ton of fun. Like, he was almost a point per game in the KHL. He's tiny, but he's violent, and look, he's like he's a fun AHL piece. We gave up a lot of veterans this year.
True.
So like we lost Belzile, we lost
Richard.
Yeah.
Anthony Lucho.
Yeah, those are the two.
He's shot in Boston. Abandonado's so I'm happy for him. Abandonado. We signed Condotta 2 years, which was good. But he's a fun AHL body.
And small but violent. That's a fun
and he's a petit gal de chez nous, so
it's good chez nous. Yeah. It's nice.
I mean, despite everything, I'm sad to see Drouin
head
out. Like
I like
time,
him
but
a lot. And Colorado's a great fit. Like them just plug him in on the top line when he's making 800K. Just playing with
McKinnon
all over again.
And Rantanen.
He could thrive. Like again, I think he needs to be in a great, great, great situation in a top six to work. But his playmaking game and intelligence are still really high end. Like, yes, the off-puck involvement is low. The defensive ability is not great. He's not consistent at all. But with McKinnon and Rantanen, I could see it working. And,
yeah, no, I'm feeling pretty confident with him.
And
there.
At 800K, you can do a whole lot worse than Jonathan Drouin. So I like that signing for Colorado. I like the fact that their two best left wings are now Drouin and Lehkonen. I think that's funny to me. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, like yeah, the Habs let some people go. Like Gorianov went to Nashville for 800K as well, which was a good move. Like Nashville did well there. I think if the Habs had some cap space, they could have easily given
him
the same
amount.
I don't
think it was a question of the cap space. I think it was just
and role.
We have so many people fighting for spots at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of bodies for sure. I mean,
don't give the spot to 25-year-olds.
Remke is still under contract for 2 years. For what, 1 year?
Yeah.
You have Pizzetto's on a 2-year deal now. RHP on a 2-year deal. Evans still has 2 years left.
Yolonen has to resign, but he's
Armia has 2 years left. Dvorak too. Like Mike Hoffman,
Slav
is there?
Is one. Like we have too many players. We have Gallagher. We have like we've listed 12 players and we haven't even touched our top six yet. So
I know. Yeah,
it's as much as I love Gurianov and as much as I think we could have fixed him. Whatever.
I'm not losing sleep over it.
Yeah, like.
Me neither. I think it's more of a thing of he could have been a really fun reclamation project, and I'm curious as to why they didn't do it, because I didn't think he was awful in the games he played with the Habs. I think he was clearly flawed, because he's a flawed player, but there's still runway there, and I think I would have tried to make some space to keep him, especially at that price, like for 800K for a year, easily.
And because that's all that we have left from PK Subban. It's over now. Like,
true.
Yeah.
He was the last remaining piece.
We traded
everything.
It's all over.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was kind of a weird free agency because, again, Montreal has no cap space or roster space, really. But, hey, I mean, it looks like the Habs are relatively set going into next season, apart from having to move out some bodies. I think guys like Armia and Hoffman and Dvorak and maybe even Anderson are potential candidates to get moved. But if they do, it'll probably be for prospects because nothing for most of them or negative value.
The exciting thing here is last season to make the Monahan trade. Oh, that's another guy we have on forward. But we had to put Price on offseason LTIR, which means we weren't able to use his flexibility. If we put him on in-season LTIR, we're going to have $94 million of cap space to work with this season.
True.
And that's going to help us facilitate a lot. And that's my one problem with the Edmondson trade is I would have like legit just traded him for futures if we could have kept the retention slot. I think in a flat cap NHL, that's like probably our most valuable asset.
But it's more of a thing of who do you use it on apart? Like Hoffman, sure. But do you want to use it on guys with term left, like Armia and Dvorak?
It's definitely becoming more common. Like, Nashville literally retained 6 years of Ekholm at $250,000.
Yeah, but it's 250K. It doesn't...
That's
But it's a slot, true. It is a long-term slot. Same thing with Ekman-Larsson and Arizona now, the buyout.
Yeah. Oh, poor them. Honestly...
That's a long
like
the
time. NHL needs to throw them a bone because that's never happened before.
but they got rid of most of that contract, which they shouldn't have been able to do considering
then
how bad
Kevin
it was
Hayes as well.
True.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, but like as a whole, the Habs haven't done much since the draft. It's been quite quiet on that front, apart from the new hook extension, obviously. But yeah, it's been a weird offseason so far.
It's been a quiet offseason just in the league. Like, apart from the DeBrincat trade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting an Erik Karlsson trade pretty soon, but still hasn't happened, so.
Hasn't happened yet. Still waiting. Yeah.
It's going to be Pittsburgh, but I have no idea what they're going to give up, but it's going to be Pittsburgh.
You think so? I can see it being Edmonton.
They can.
It's because Karlsson wants to go to Pittsburgh.
I can understand it. It's just a team with both Letang and Karlsson
makes no sense.
Yeah, you need some defensive reinforcements.
And apparently
there.
He has like some problems with Brent Burns, and he doesn't want to go to Carolina.
Interesting. I mean, they were teammates up until last season, so
yeah. I mean, how cool would a Sleeve and Carlson pairing be? But it doesn't look like we're going to get it. So
apparently not. But yeah, I think that kind of wraps up this episode of the Puck and Roll podcast. I think we're getting into the bare bones of the free agency talk here. And we need to save some things for the rest of the offseason, because it's going to be a while until we get more updates. So we need to conserve our talking topics. But yeah, that wraps it up for this one. Thanks to Aaron and Josh for joining me, as always. And we'll see you again very soon. Whiskey.